This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
Good morning. What a joy it is to be with you. It's my glorious homecoming after 27 years. Now, for some of you, you might have seen that show called Sue Thomas, FBI. As I've traveled around speaking, I've come to realize there's three most popular questions that I keep getting asked over and over again. Question number one, are you the real Sue Thomas? I was when I woke up this morning. Question number two, how long did you work for the FBI? Only for 3.5 years, just long enough to get a TV show out of it. And question number three, did you really run down the street catching the bad guys? Do I look like I ran down the street catching the bad guys? It's been an awful lot of fun, and I could never, ever imagine the journey that God would take me on. A journey, well, that's been for 61 years. But I want to share with you this morning, I do not come before you as a preacher. I'm not a preacher. I'll let the men do the preaching. I'll let the men do the leading. Because you have to remember, way back then, it was the woman that got everybody in trouble to begin with. So we'll just let them get us out of trouble now that we got into the trouble. And I'm not here as a teacher either. Please, I don't have the academic knowledge or the studies behind me. But if there's one title that I come to you this morning, it's that, as a witness. Being profoundly deaf since the age of 18 months, my eyes have been everything. To be able to behold the majestic splendor of His beauty, to simply communicate by reading lips. As that first glorious risen Sunday morning, when Christ first revealed Himself to a woman and told her to go to the disciples that announced that He indeed had risen from the dead, I followed those footsteps of that woman on that first Sabbath to proclaim Him as a witness to make Him known. In the course of my life, I have witnessed many, many different things. And in each step along the way, there have been certain areas and certain times that stand out, that are pronounced, that I carry them with me forever. One of the latest of those times was this past July, when I had the opportunity to go to American Keswick to be with the CIU alumni reunion. I had waited for the moment when I would be able to see Dr. Robertson McQuilkin. It had been almost 27 years since I saw that man, and I wanted to go. I needed to see him. I wanted to thank him for so many, many different things. And I got there, and my nerves were really a mess, and the emotions were a mess. And wouldn't you know it, the very first night, they set me at Dr. McQuilkin's table. The very first thing that he said to me was, "Sue, I'm so proud of you." I totally lost it. I'm choking on my food. I have to get away from the table. There's no way I can sit with this man. My composure was totally gone. So I excused myself. I got up. I went outside. And I kept thinking, he doesn't remember, he doesn't remember, he can't possibly remember. And after finding the strength and getting the peace and praying, I was able to return. But I had a hard time with my meal, and I said, "Dr. McQuilkin, I really need to have some time to speak with you while I'm here." And I said, "The sooner the better." So he agreed to meet with me the next morning. While on my way to the meeting, Dr. Jones bumped into me. And he says, Sue, I've heard so much about you. We just have to have some quality time together. I said, great. On my way to a meeting right now with Dr. McQuilkin, I would like you to be present with me. And he agreed. That day, with those two men and my travel companion, I sat before them, and I leaned forward, and I looked at Dr. McQuilkin, and I said, I only have one question for you. During your time in your tenure, did you ever expel anyone or kick anyone out? And he looked at me, and he was puzzled. And then he leaned closer to me, and he looked into my eyes and said, did we kick you out? And I thought, so much for the glorious homecoming. That is how the journey began for me to return today, to step before you, to be able to proclaim the faithfulness and the love of Jesus Christ. My journey has been one that has been difficult and been trying for me at times. Losing my hearing at the age of 18 months, I had to learn to speak. That was very laborious and very hard. 7 years in front of a mirror with my speech therapist over and over, trying to form my mouth the same way she formed her mouth. At the end of 7 years, she gave everything that she could, and she knew that there was still more in me to make me better. So she handed me over to a voice teacher. Now, I didn't study voice for professional singing. Rather, the voice was to get my voice to fluctuate up and down and up and down. And after years of voice, they brought in a dramatic reading teacher, where for years all I did was recite poetry for articulation and enunciation. So many, many years has gone into this voice, and yet I know I still talk funny. And people say, oh, no, you don't. But I know that I do. Well, how's that? Well, I can be at the airport, a restaurant, a hotel, any place at any time, and somebody will always come up to me and say, where are you from? You really have an accent. It all depends on the way I woke up this morning and which way the wind's blowing. I've been claimed to be South Africa, British. The only thing I haven't been proclaimed to be Japanese, but I'm probably still working on that without knowing it. But talking funny, well, it does have some advantages. Why? Because you have to listen really carefully to what I'm saying to make sure you understand. It was talking funny. They gave me my greatest pain and my deepest ridicules. Imagine talking so funny and going to a public school. Day in and day out, I was ridiculed every time I opened my mouth to speak. And I got to the point where I wouldn't open my mouth. Day in and day out, I sat in the front row trying to read my teacher's lips to gain the understanding of what was being taught. Oh, I got the questions pretty good. I just never knew the kid behind me was raising his hand, giving the answer. I didn't get the answer. As a result, one day my teacher came up to my desk and she took me to another classroom. That classroom was known as the dummy class. For 12 years, I sat in the silence. I never opened my mouth. And for 12 years, I didn't know what was going on. I was the dummy. And during those times, my parents instilled in me the faith that I was created in the image of God and that he did not make any mistakes whatsoever. We went to church on Sunday, though the Bible was never really taught in the home, and the only time the prayer was said was after the blessing for Sunday meal. And yet, we all claimed to be a Christian. But I held on to that faith that there was a God, someone that was superior to me. And without no friends, he did become my friend. But over and over and over, I questioned the statement that my parents made. God never made a mistake. Surely he made a mistake with me. He had to. Why? Because in his creation, when he created me, he gave me a heart that just loves people. I know when I stand before him and he looks in that book of life, there's going to be a note right beside my name that says, God's greatest party animal. I love the party. I love a good time. I love people. But at the same time, in that creation of that love of my heart, he allowed the silence to overtake me. The two don't go hand in hand. Helen Keller said it best when she said, blindness separates a person from things, objects. Deafness separates a person from people. All I ever wanted was a friend. And I never knew those friendships until I got later in high school, and they were the wrong crowd, tremendous rebellion. A teacher would lead me on the right path with my studies. And she helped me to the point where I was able to get into college one day, though it took me 8 years to leave the place once I got there. God was busy writing the script of my life every step before me. It was ordained and it was a plan. And you have to admit, who could ever thought that a profoundly deaf girl that was a dummy, that was laughed at and ridiculed, would end up at the FBI becoming their secret weapon? Only God could write this script. Hollywood couldn't even touch it. Okay? Just totally amazing. Now, people say, well, what did you do for the FBI? Well, they had a problem. And I didn't realize how big the problem was until they called me in to interrogate me. And that day, as I sat down with all the agents, the questions started just like in real life, like you see on TV. And they looked at me and they said, Ms. Thomas, we understand that you watch TV to communicate. Whoops, I said that wrong. Ms. Thomas, we understand that you read lips to communicate, and you do a very good job. But there's only one thing we want to know, just one thing. Do you watch TV? Do I watch TV? Is it a federal crime to watch TV? I watch TV. Well, is it difficult for you, Ms. Thomas, to get anything out of it? Well, yeah, I do. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? If the camera's on the person, I see their lips, I can read them. But so many times the camera's not on the person, I can't see anything. I don't get anything. Well, how about movies, Ms. Thomas? Do you go to movies? Is it any better? Yes, sir. I go to movies. And it's a lot better. It really is, It's the lips. They're a lot bigger. On and on went the questions. And I came to realize that the FBI had a very large problem. They were video filming their suspect on this particular case. But when the camera activated, the sound mechanism failed. They had all this film with the bad guys talking. They just couldn't hear it. They wanted to know if I would watch it, write down any word. I said, sure, no problem. From that day on, I read lips for the FBI. To sum up my job, I followed the bad guys around and I read their lips. Then I went and told the good guys what the bad guys were saying. And they even paid me to do it too. And overnight, like the snap of a finger, I finally made it in the world of sound. Good job, good salary, somewhat of a novelty in Washington, where I began to be invited to congressional and senator's parties. And for 3.5 years, I lived in the fast lane of Washington, D.C., celebrating my success. At the end of 3.5 years, I came to realize that there had to be an awful lot more to life than the Washington thing. And I began to pray in earnest that God would answer once and for all my question. The question is, did you make a mistake in your creation? Did you make a mistake the day you created my heart for the love of people? And you allowed the silence to overtake and erase him. Most people come to Columbia with a heart to serve God, to prepare them for the field. I came to Columbia for the answer. For the answer. God was waiting for my arrival. And the lessons that he taught me were not found in the classroom or by the teachers. The lessons were by God Almighty himself, with the people that he used and the circumstances. I'm 34 years of age when I arrived on this campus, and I had 34 years of garbage that I was carrying. The hatred and the bitterness of my deafness, the separation, the alienation of people that I wanted to be with. So many times I cried out to God, please let me hear. And it was always the same, the great silence. Now, he's ready for me. Because when I arrived on this campus, I didn't just find one or two friends. I found 25 of them. 25 students that we all attended the same classes and seminary, where we all came together and ate the meals and we prayed and we fellowship and we sang the hymns. I lived in an apartment off campus off of Broad River Road. And every time I was with my friends, by all outward visible appearances, I was the party animal. I loved the laugh. And I would leave to go back to my apartment and totally destroy everything within my reach with the anger and the hatred and the bitterness. Why? When I read lips, I can only read them one-on-one, two at the most. And then it's like watching somebody play tennis. They talk, they'll stop, they'll talk, they'll stop, they'll talk, I can do it. For every person that you put into my midst, I start deteriorating. I can't function. And now God has thrown me in with 25 people. The anger, the frustration, the hostility. I cried out, do whatever you have to do, but give me my hearing that I can function. And he didn't answer. Rather, he knew the route where I was headed. And he handed me over to my deprived mind, wanting something so greatly, wanting what I wanted, not what God wanted, that I went to one of my friends and I told her a lie. I told her that I had a terminal disease, that I was dying. How could you? Why would you? Because in my warped, deprived mind, I thought if she believed me, she would want to spend as much time with me one-on-one. And that's exactly what happened. But in the course of telling that first lie, I had no idea that it would fan out to those 25 friends. And surely I had no idea that the split second that I uttered that lie would last for over 7 months. And I had no idea that that lie would totally consume me and destroy me. This chapel was praying for physical healing for me. God knew that I didn't need no physical healing, that I needed the spiritual healing. And the prayers were answered in a powerful way when his hand came down upon me with a crushing blow, where I became disoriented, where I didn't know whether I was coming or going. I was wasting away, where I couldn't take it any longer. And I went to that best friend, and I said, please call my advisor at school. I need to meet with him the first thing in the morning, and he needs to have another faculty member with him. That morning, I met with those two men, tears streaming down my face. I confessed my sin. I knew that I would have to go to those 25 different friends and tell them the truth. And I was prepared to do that. I wanted to do that. But what I didn't know is that I would have to stand before the entire academic committee of that school. The night before I was to meet that committee was the longest, darkest, quietest night of my life. The shame and the guilt was unbearable to the point where I had so much fear I couldn't face the committee. I got my suitcase out and I began to pack my bags to run away. I couldn't go through with them. And as I was packing, my Bible fell on the floor and it fell open. And I picked it up and I sat on my bed and I looked down. And I looked twice because it's open to the book of Hosea. And I'm thinking to myself, Hosea, how many times have I ever gone to the book of Hosea? What's Hosea? And I looked down again and I started to read. And as I read, there was such a peace that came over to me. I heard the voice of God that I had never heard in my lifetime. And he wasn't just talking to me. He was giving me a promise. A promise that I held on to for dear life, that the next day I was able to stand before that committee to confess my sin. In my darkest hour, my most shameful hour, in the book of Hosea, this is what God said to me. Oh, Thomas, return to the Lord your God, for you have been crushed by your sins. Take words and come back to me, for my anger will be forever gone. I will love you freely, Thomas. You will blossom like a lily. Your roots will go deeply into the soils of Lebanon, and your people will return from exile far away and will rest beneath my shadow. That morning, as I stood before the committee, tears streaming down my face, my speech so garbled, there was one man that I made contact with. And in some ways, I wish that I had never seen him. But God took me to this one man. And what I witnessed that day was Dr. Robinson McQuilkin sitting in the chair, bent over, shaking his head, and with a tear coming down his cheek. I will never, ever forget that moment. You know, to go back to that question, back in July when I saw Dr. McQuilkin for the first time, And he leaned forward and he said, "Did we kick you out?" "No." I responded, "No, Dr. McCrogan, you didn't. But by all accounts, you should have. And you could have. But instead, you allowed the school to teach me the biblical principles of forgiveness. Have helped me with the healing and the restoring and sent me." In July, I looked at him and I said, "Dr. McCorkin, I have waited 27 years to be able to meet you face to face. But thank you. I did not receive any degree, an earthly degree, from this school. But what I did receive is my eternal salvation. I came to the school, my name is being a Christian, talking the talk, but I never walked the walk. And it was that night, in my shameful hour, I went flat on my face and cried out to God, 'Forgive me. I cannot live like this. I don't want to live like this. I won't live like this. You must live in me. I totally give you my all, and I'll never take it back.' Homecoming is CIU. This is where I began. And when I left that day, after meeting that committee, I cried out to God, 'Please, I only have one desire. One desire only, if you allow this. Let me go to every nation. Let me stand before every generation to proclaim your love and your faithfulness and the forgiveness of your Son, Christ Jesus.' Friends, I know him. I met him here, face to face. I know him, and oh, with every breath, I want to make him known. You can never ever realize the homecoming." And you know, this morning, as we sang, I looked out into this body, and I had to turn my head away, and I had to look down. I couldn't look at you. Why? Because of the memories of 27 years ago. I was allowed to stay on this school. There were stipulations. I would find biblical counseling, all the biblical counseling by Bill Graham, that I was finally able to throw off that garbage, and I began to walk. But even though the school forgave me, I was having a hard time forgiving myself. And I would come to chapel late. I couldn't walk with the student body. And those doors would be closed. And I would look through the window, and the tears would be streaming down my face, saying, "I am so unworthy to be a part of a body. I've come home. And I thank you and Dr. McCorkin for keeping that porch light burning, that there will always be a way to return." Friends, though I can't hear music, God planted that in me as he planted every living creature of all flesh, whether it be the birds or the animals, in their sweet melody with their noises. He has created us with the human voice to sing adoration and praise. We are his greatest instrument ever made. 27 years ago, they just wrote the song and came out, "I Love You, Lord." And we sang it. During my healing, and restoring. One day, I'm driving down Broad River Road from my apartment, and God gave me a song in my heart and the words I need for Him. It's the second phase of I Love You, Lord, that's never been written. I praise you, Lord, and I give my soul to you, be the glory, let my life so shout. Take all of me and let it be for your glory and honor through eternity. That is the true story of Sir Thomas FBI that Holly wouldn't ever touch. Sir Thomas FBI, firm believer in Jesus. That is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Bless you.
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.